Here we go. We are up to this week, the Bach. The Bach. As we journey, I forgot to bring show and tell. Right now, let's go through a tour. You open up a tour, we're going to cover the whole page. Yeah, that's our game plan right now. The tour, we started with the Beis Yosef, so he's already pre-hour cutoff. The tour was a Rishon, son of the Rush, who was actually born in Spain, whose father was German. So the tour is this interesting Ashkenazi Minhagim, right? The Rush was a Talmud of the Maharami Rutenberg, yet moves to Spain, meets up with the Rajba, and raises his children in Spain. So the tour is this like interesting breed of Ashkenazi Sephardi. He writes, he was the one who coined the Arba Chalakim that we have today of Urachayim, Yerodeya, Kush and Mishpat, Evan Ezer. He was the one who made them, made the four parts. And the Beis Yosef, when he wrote his magnum opus, called Beis Yosef, he wrote on the tour. And that's how we have the four Arba Chalkei Shulchan Aruch that we have come to know today. Now on the page, on the rest of the page, there's Beis Yosef. On the other side, there's the Bach. That's today. And then in the coming week, either next week or in 2 weeks, there's the Drisha and the Prisha. Darkei Moshe we did. So we're covering the entire page. Do we have any? You don't have anyone have a booklet from this week? Okay. So we're covering the whole page of the tour. We did Beis Yosef. We've done the Darkei Moshe. We're gonna do the Bach. And as we go through the page. This is the show and tell. We've done the Beis Yosef. We've done, this doesn't have a Darkei Moshe. Darkei Moshe. We're gonna do today the Bach, and that only leaves the Prisha and the Drisha, who are the same person. So by next week, we'll be finishing all the Mefarshim on the tour, and you'll have a basic background on who they were. They were all basically the same, more or less, the same century. Yeah, from around 1500 or around 1530 to 1630, give or take. They all lived in those 100 years. So, who was the Bach? What was his name? Reb Yoel?
Circus,
right? So, Barnum and Bailey? It was Sarakez. As we've spoken about before, Sarakez, he was Saras. Sarakez, apostrophe S.
Like Zaras?
No, Sarah. Sarah. Like Sarah Imenu. Sarakez, that lushan of affinity. Ke, right? Sarakez. Sarakez, apostrophe S, is Sarakez. So, his mother was Sarah. What was his actual surname? Which again, I never have gotten clear. How come some of them have surnames? If anyone has a clear delineation, when surnames were only in mass usage in the 1800s.
1820 it started.
Great. 1820. I'm happy you came. So.
What do you mean? All those families started that surname. You're saying Jewish. You're saying Jewish people.
Throughout Europe. Yeah. So Chaim Volozhiner, you just missed it. He's known as Volozhiner, right? But he was right at that tkuva, right? Volozhiner was an attempt to open it in 1805. The Vilna Gaon, while he was still alive. And then they opened it after the Vilna Gaon actually died. Yeah. So somehow the Bach had a last name, as did the Lavush. They had the same last name. Their name was Yaffa. Yaffe. Yeah. Jaffe. Whatever. Same name. Yud Fei He. They were actually second cousins. So, how do we know this? In one of the tshuvas, the Bach goes and refers to his father, Reb Shmuel, who quotes from his father, Reb Moshe Yaffe. So, we have to assume they all, father to son, have the same name, and they're all the same mishpachas Yaffe. So that's his name. Where was he born? In Lublin. How do we know? I heard someone quote, there's two different tshuvas of the Bach. Why that is, I don't know. I haven't found out myself. There's Bach Yishonis and Bach Chadoshis. Tshuvas HaBach, the old ones and the new ones. What was the cutoff and why? Still not clear. But he writes in... No, I don't believe there's any discrepancies or contradictions.
They were all in his life?
They were all published, as far as I know, in his lifetime. But he writes there that one time his father bought him maftir. There's a shayla, can a katan do the haftorah? Yeah, so there are some kehilas that still do it. Generally speaking, here in this shul, what do? You have to be on mitzvah? Ask the gabbai. I'm happy you came.
Never did a katan.
Okay, never. A katan has never gotten. In my years growing up, actually here in Young Israel, I've never seen a katan do it. But he says, an Eretz Yisrael, they're mekel. I've never seen it. Personally, I've never seen it. So he says, my father bought me haftorah, and I was a katan. And he says, and if I recall, the marshal was in shul. It was his shul. So that means, when he was a katan, he was living in Lublin, because the marshal was in Lublin. So that puts you in, it gives you a time frame, right? This is the same time frame. Yeah, that means he's, if the marshal was even alive, that means the early 1500s. So when was he born? He was born in, not early 1500s, he was born in 1561. He lived a very long life. He lived 79 years until the year Tough. Anybody, this is an easy one. How do we calculate it? You remember. Tough, how do we calculate the Hebrew to the English? Tough, you always add 1240. So Tough, the year Tough is 1640. There you have it. Okay? Tough, always 1240. This was the easy one. You're not going to get easier than Tough. The year Tough is 1640. So he died in 1640 at the age of 79, which is a very long life. So at 15, somewhere around 15, right? He couldn't have been 13. So 1561 he was born. In the early 1570s, he was in Lublin in the shul of the Marshal. Okay. Who were his rebbeim? Who were the Bach's rebbeim? So some of these, again, I'll just say, what was his name? I actually don't remember. One of his rebbeim were Reb Shlomo Reb Leibish. Why do they do this? They used to do this. I actually had a friend who's a Slonim or Chassid, family friend. He told me in Slonim today, in 2022, they actually still do this. Because there are so many people with the last name Weinberg. The Rebbe's name is Weinberg, right? The Rebbe's family, Weinberg. One of the Rebbe's, if anyone knows Slonim. Okay, that was for fun, for kicks. So, one of the Slonimer families is called Weinberg, and there's so many people whose name is Avram Weinberg. So how do you identify yourself? So they do the father's name. Avram ben Moshe Weinberg. The problem is there are six Avram ben Moshe Weinbergs. So what do you do now? So he said, till this day, what they do, they go back three generations, and occasionally you leave four. Avram ben Moshe ben Itzik Weinberg. Oh, Avram Moshe ben Itzik Weinberg. Why didn't you tell me? Of course I know you. I know your grandfather. We're all second cousins, twice removed, or brothers. Yeah, it's one big happy family. So back in the day, that's how they identified themselves. They didn't have surnames. So Reb Shlomo Reb Leibish, because Reb Shlomo from the city of Vilna, there could be 20 of them, right? Reb Shlomo Reb Leibish, so you've definitely minimized how many people it could possibly be. So that's one of his rebbeim. Another one is one of the big rabbanim, Reb Leib from Krakow. His people are not very well known. He opened up a yeshiva. He obviously, his son writes in one of the Akdamas that he learned Torah B'doicha, which I always like to say, yeah, there's nothing new. Mahalach Alimud, we mentioned, going fast, going slow. It was the same fight 500 years ago, right? As we mentioned. You want to know something? Many Gedolim, whether everyone here will like it or not, I'm going to say it, I'm just going to blurt it out. They married very wealthy families. And it wasn't by chance. It was very pragmatic. They wanted to sit and learn. And they got, you know, read these tremendous shidduchim from Hatzi Tatzi Parnassim. The Parnas was one of the most influential, in those days, one of the most influential people, arguably in the entire region. A Parnas, if you were a Parnas, that means you were a man of tremendous affluence, power, and wealth, like you can't imagine. So they would always go looking for the best guys and offer them these dowries like you can't imagine. So the Bach, as far as I know, I don't know who his father-in-law was. I actually don't know who his father-in-law was. We know who his son-in-law was, which we're going to get to. But I don't know who his father-in-law was, and his son writes that he learned Torah b'doichak. And he definitely vaksoys to be the Bach. So he opened up a yeshiva. Who are some of his talmidim? The most famous one is the Taz, who ended up becoming his son. So we're going to get to the Taz in a moment. We're going to really foreshadow for the week of the Taz. It's not, like, not clear. The famous story about the Din Torah, which week do you put it in, the Bach or the Taz? So we're going to do it in the Bach, because there's a lot more history that we know of the Taz. So we can afford to say the story by the Bach. But one other story, the Megal HaMukis, we're going to get there. We're going to say the story. The Megal HaMukis writes in the Akdamot to Megal HaMukis. Again, not the same 1600s, right? He died in the 1640s. Megal HaMukis was also in the 1600s. He writes, there's a story written in the Hakdamah to Megal HaMukis that when the Bach was writing the Bach, the Bais Chadash, it was towards the end of his life. Again, he wasn't a young man, but Megal HaMukis came to him and he said, if you're going to write it, you will lead to your demise. You'll die over it. Which again, we've heard, there's a lot of these types of stories by a lot of gedolim. And he deliberately gave his life up to finish his work, and now we have the Bach. Okay? How do we know the story to be true? Who actually recorded that story? Did the Megal HaMukis write the Hakdamah himself? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot to, if you really want to get down to, like, did this story really happen? But it's definitely, I always like to say, they don't say the stories about me and you. And definitely wasn't something that was so weighted for some, whatever reason, that you had his life had to be taken. But now we have the Bach. The Bach was written on all Arba Chelke Tur. Generally more Sugya-oriented, Sugya-based. Usually goes right into the Gemaras, back and forth. In the Shitas, in the Gemaras. Generally, that's why many Sugyas Alibet Hilchasa, they'll do scattered Bach. Because it really, if you're learning the Sugyas, the Bach is the Maor Mokim, if you want to get into it. If you're trying to get Alibet Hilchasa, very often the Bach will take you back into a journey into the Man D'Amrim in the Gemara and not even be as Ali B'Dehilchasa at the end of the day. So what was the story with the Taz? He ended up going and getting the Taz as a son-in-law. The Taz of David HaLevi. Also, to put one last thing in perspective, the Taz, he died in the year Tuf. So he really, what? The Bach. Yeah, the Bach. Going back to the Bach for a moment. Thank you. Going back to the Bach for a moment, he died in the year Tuf. He luckily was spared from Tach V'Tah. Tach V'Tah was the biggest in history. There's always like tremendous points that are really like landmarks.
Inflection points.
Well said. Inflection points. So Tach V'Tah was definitely one of those points. And everything changed. People were on the move. The entire Ukraine was either slaughtered or uprooted or relocated. Ukraine, and then he came back 7 years later in Tuf Tesvav, Chelnitsky, and he massacred the entire Vilna. And Nuremberg, and you name it, Wallerstein, and all these towns, literally, we're talking 20,000 dead, 15,000 dead, city by city. And if you ever want to, again, for the 3 weeks or the 9 days, you ever want a terrible, terrible read, there's a Yid, Reb Nosson of Hanover, who wrote actually a book. It's called Yevhen Metzula. And it's translated into English. You can find it. It's still around. You can get your hands on it. He actually walks you through what they did. And they can make the most barbaric people seem like angels, these Cossacks. back from Tachvatat. So the Bach, he just misses it. He just misses it. He dies in the year Tuf.
Tachvatat.
Tach Tuf, Ches, and Tuf Tet.
1648.
And 1649. Yeah. And then the round two was 1655. So everyone who was in Vilna at the time, the Chalakas Mechoikik, the Shach, the Be'er Agoyla, Ramosha Rifkis, another one of the mother's names who got in. Yeah, Rifkis. So, who was the great-grandfather of the Vilna Goyen? Ramosha Rifkis, the Be'er Agoyla.
They were killed, right?
No, so many of them fled. And it's very cool to see. We're going to get to them in their weeks. They write, so I'm on the move. I don't have any svarim. And he continues writing the Shach. And I'm on my way to Amsterdam, fleeing for my life, the Be'er Agoyla writes. And he's continuing to write and to pen the Be'er Agoyla. So, I don't know how many Talmidei Chachamim. Put it into perspective to today. How many Talmidei Chachamim who are writing Svarim right now? Lo Aleinu, who are fleeing for their lives in parts of the world today? How many of them are writing Svarim on their run to Moldova? It's like, put it in perspective what that means, even to write Svarim while you're on the move. So what happens? Back to the Bach for a moment. Yeah? Back to the Bach. He gets a son-in-law, Reb David Halevi, who was the Taz. He then gives him a nice dowry, or at least guarantees that he'll be able to feed him a piece of meat. The Bach was the Rav in Bells, in Brisk, in Krakow. He definitely had a lot of Rabbanisin, and supposedly on his Matseva, they list every single town he was in. But we definitely know that the Taz moved into Brisk back in the day, yeah? You think the money was free. You had to live with them. You didn't just get a dowry and they buy you a house. Enjoy. You lived with the in-laws. Yeah? So you pay. You paid pretty heavily for that nice dowry. But he goes and the Taz lived by the Bach in Brisk. And there's two different versions I've heard. It's really irrelevant what exactly it was. I'm gonna run out of time. So one version was that he said he's gonna give him a piece of meat every week, and then he ended up giving him either the lung or chicken. And he wasn't able to deliver on his word. So what do you do when the son-in-law now can't deliver? He doesn't get the sustenance he needs. He takes his father-in-law, the Bach, to a Din Torah. Could you imagine? Family strife. He takes him to a Din Torah, and it's paskind in favor. Well, I don't know. That's a very, very great question. I would love to know. I don't know. We gotta finish. We're way over time. So they take him to Din Torah, and the Bach came out on top. That the chicken was considered l'halacha within his statement of giving him meat every week. So they say over again, this is already a nice shmua that I never saw written from the Taz directly. Could it have been made up? I don't know, but definitely gives it a lot of perspective. The Taz supposedly said that the reason why he took his father-in-law to the interior was not over dollars and cents. It was over if he would have any less level of learning because his father-in-law couldn't hold his word. So the Bach's gonna get punishment like you can't imagine in Shemayim. The only way to get him off the hook is if in Bezin Shal Mata, they paskin, he's off the hook, then Bezin Shal Mala, he'll be fine. So the Taz therefore took him to Din Torah to be able to get him off the hook. And that was the Bach to be continued, or until next time.